To make a big switch in kind of the direction this conversation is going, not that I haven't very much enjoyed it, and I've always said that, like I enjoy our conversations. I enjoy the way you make me think and the questions you sometimes pose yourself or thoughts you have. I've always enjoyed that. And so again, I appreciate that way and kind of, yeah, letting me air and vent some of my own random and yin yang off the cuff type thoughts. But you say you haven't got any major trips coming up, but I did want to say that obviously we're flying you out to the States to come and join the retreat, which I'm super excited about. And I was actually only just talking to this about a client last night because I shared with it whenever this podcast is out next week. Actually, it's weird because I normally bank a heap of podcasts together and I haven't done a podcast for now, I reckon like a month. And so I feel weird kind of like because I did so many in a row. And then, yeah, so I've got now three or four banked in the next kind of couple of days kind of thing that'll hopefully extend me out past July kind of thing. But I only just got back from Melbourne because I went there for a charity event with the client, and this client runs a big foundation and charity, and it's their big event that they run every year. And we're kind of getting on the conversation of, is it the best way for her to raise money, raise awareness for the cause and the foundation that she's doing? Because these massive events, while events and big charities that have been around for a lot, and I've only started learning a lot about this since kind of going deeper into what she's been doing with this foundation that she started, is that some of these big charities that you know, that a lot of the donors and the sponsors and things like that, when they're mature type foundations, those sponsors and that do it for free. They won't charge for that ability to have them, or if you have a catering company come in, they won't charge you. They want to be part of it because they see it as we're going to benefit from this because we're catering this big event, so we won't charge you for it, but we realize it will probably get some business off the back and those kinds of things. But where they are at the moment, a lot of it is overhead because they just have to put in so much sweat equity, but time, energy, effort, and funds to actually put on this massive event. And once it's all, the dust settles, and then you kind of add up what the ticket costs were and what they got back and then the auctions they ran and the different things like that. Oh, cool. We made X amount, thousands of dollars. That's great. We can now put that towards. But their aim is to get every single cent that they earn directly to research that's going to help their cause, which is around kind of female-based type cancers, ovarian, breast cancer, and those kind of cancers. And I was like, that's interesting you just say that because, and this will parry into what I'm just about to say, is that I've always wanted to run retreats and I loved running the retreat I did in the first year. I've been very open and honest. I lost a lot of money on that first retreat, but I knew I was. It was purely a marketing ploy as of, I'm running a retreat. These are the things. I'm going to capture some photos and some footage and then I'm going to use that as my way to kind of move forward. I took it all as a marketing type cost. The second one that I'm running now, it will turn a profit, but I look at it and kind of go, all the time, all the energy, I've got to be away from my girls. It's 4 days and you will experience this when you get there. So I pre-apologize for how tired you will be at the end of it all. But when I did it with Tom, and you'll meet Tom as well, and Tom is coming, as I said, as another coach for it this time around. He does all the massages for the clients as well, helps run some things. We got to the end of it. We're at the airport and it's like, I'm dead. Like, because it's just, it's 4 days of nonstop, like you're on the whole time. Like, and these people have paid good money to be there and you can't just like, I'm a bit tired, go and do that yourself. It's like, no. I paid to be here. You need to kind of service me. And there is no one like that. They're amazing clients and they're amazing guests that have been a part of it. But I still expect a high level of service. You've been willing to hand over the money. I'm going to deliver that to you. So I say all of this to say, to kind of parry on the back of what she was saying as well with her foundation, it's a lot of effort for a very small return. And so this might be the last time that I run one. It might not be. I don't know. I'm just excited to have you come over, that we could get you into Australia, we could have you part. Because I remember saying years ago, I'd love for us to do some work together. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know how that plays out, whether it's a product we do together or I get you over here and we do something as a seminar or a talk or whatever. But here we are years later. we're going to meet for the very first time at an airport in person. And then I'm going to say,
I feel like somebody should film that moment.
Yeah. You know, now we've got 4 days of work that we kind of need to kind of get into. Luckily, it's about a depending on traffic, it's about a 2-hour drive from that Brisbane airport where I'll pick you up from to where the retreat is. So we've got 2 hours of just kind of, okay, hello, how are you? Let's kind of now kind of sort what we're going to kind of get out kind of here. But as I said, it's a really tough thing to do. And like I see people run retreats and I see these companies do it. And I personally don't know how they make money on it. And I think I do them. I think I provide a service, and people who have been on it will probably agree with me, I hope, and say that, yeah, you did a really good retreat. I know I can do things better. And I hope this second one that I'm now doing is a better version and a more polished version of the first one I ran. But at the end of the day, there's only so much you can do and how much you can pull out of it to actually go, okay, this is worthwhile from a monetary point of view. Because at the end of the day, I'm not a charity. I am a business. I need to kind of earn something from this. And it's a really small margin. And so people who run them, you know, every other month, or they run multiple versions of it, they're, you know, maybe they've got other people running them, but they're kind of coordinating it and things like that. I cannot imagine the stress that it must involve for a very small return. The only caveat I'll say for that, and then I'll ask your 2 cents on, you know, are you feeling excited about it all, is that I'm potentially looking at running one in Bali. And the two things, again, this is going to be the theme of this. One side of my brain says yes, the other side of my brain says no, for two reasons, is that one, the margins are much better because obviously, one, the Australian dollar goes a lot further in Bali. And for two, things are just naturally cheaper in Bali. But then the flip to that is everyone runs retreats in Bali. It's like, come to my yoga retreat, come to my Pilates retreat, come to my fitness retreat, come to my wealth. Like everyone's doing that. And so it's kind of like, I don't want to just be another one of those. But I really do enjoy running retreats and I can't afford to do it in Australia because it's just so expensive here. So again, that's where I'm at. So I say all of that to say, I'm super excited for you to come, but to people listening in, and I know the people who are coming to the retreat, who have come to a retreat, potentially are listening to this podcast. And so I'm saying this could be extra special because it might be the last one I ever run. There's a part of me, I hope that's not the case, but it very well might be because again, my wants in life are just, I just want more time with my girls. I don't want to leave them. I hate getting on a plane and I don't know how Amy does it every single week. And again, we've had those conversations with each other, like how you do it. I can't leave these girls for a day without kind of getting teary in the back of a hotel, kind of, I miss my girls, yeah, kind of thing. But yeah, so I say all of that. Like, are you excited about it all? Are you trepidatious about, like, are you nervous? Like, what's kind of running through your head at the moment?
Let me just say, plot twist, this is all a master marketing ploy, false scarcity, pretending this is the last retreat ever. So the next one absolutely crushes. And let me modify my original statement. You had mentioned how I mentioned that I have no upcoming big trips. I should have clarified big moves specifically. I'm so used to, you know, after 3 months here, we're going here. But yeah, trips, absolutely. And it's funny timing that we're talking about it now because I just booked my Airbnb for the week that I'll have prior to connecting with you, because as you know, I was terrified and still am about being absolutely crushed by the time zone difference. I'm somebody who, like, I'm an 8 to 9 hours guy. I'm not somebody who beats my chest and says I can run off 3 hours of sleep and I'm just Superman. I very much prioritize sleep. So with that said, yeah, I'm arriving 5 days prior to actually needing to arrive. So, and I can ideally adjust and not be half asleep throughout the retreat. But yeah, I'm ridiculously excited. From like an event planning organization perspective, if I were not doing what I do right now in terms of coaching and how I run my business, I truly think that something event organization promotion related would be on a short list of other careers that I would pursue. I don't know if it's, you know, the fact that my OCD tendencies lend themselves to being, you know, very much on top of these things, developing standard operating procedures, connecting with people. You know, my mom basically does this for a living. She works at the high school that I went to, and she'll put on events for 800, 900 people, like crazy, crazy stuff. So I think seeing a lot of that, picking up a lot of the tips and tricks from her, I actually really enjoy I think a lot of the stuff that most people do not from a planning perspective. So whether it was me running a 3-on-3 charity basketball tournament when I was in high school, I've run a few charity events myself. And I find, I don't know if it's checking the boxes is fun to me or what, but almost starting of, okay, I know what the outcome is that I want. Same with the last event that I ran pre-COVID, we had close to 100 women come to my friend's gym. We did multiple talks. We did a group workout. And I knew that's what I wanted the final product to be. So at that point, it's working backwards and like, all right, what are all the steps? What's the most time sensitive? What are the things that could theoretically go wrong? What are the things that I'm not even thinking of? And to give a really quick example there, I had everybody sign just like a standard workout waiver when they walked in the door before they did the group exercise stuff. And my mom thought ahead to something I never would have thought of, which is don't put the waivers at the table right when they walk in the door. I know that seems like it makes sense to knock it out right away, but you're going to have a gigantic buildup of people where because of that crowd, either people aren't getting in the door or they skip past the waivers altogether. And again, that seems subtle, but picking up, my mom's the expert here, picking up on that, I'm like, ooh, like I didn't think of that. So I almost, not almost, I really do enjoy a lot of the little stuff that I think people consider, and I'm not saying you said this whatsoever, but the stuff that people consider tedious, so they don't really like diving into. I don't know what it is, but I absolutely enjoy it. And to that point, I'm looking forward to, of course, being helpful however I can with running this retreat. Whatever you want to hand off, I'm game. I got my 5 days in advance to prepare to make sure I'm super well rested. And then, yeah, we'll be on fire.
Yeah, no, I'm really keen on it and what, you know, you can bring to the table and how we can go about that. And I'm happy to kind of workshop this over the air as we are now, because the retreat sold out. It's not like I need to sell it anymore kind of thing. And I know you said regards to maybe wink, the next wink, one, wink, you know, kind of thing. There's never going to be another one kind of thing. But to that point, like my idea has always been, or originally was, it was kind of like the fitness, fasting and lifestyle retreat is kind of where I originally had the concept for it, is that not only am I going to bring, because I was still in that world and mindset, because I originally wanted to run a retreat back in 2018 is when I first got the kind of first concept and idea. And I'm the ever procrastinator, perfectionist kind of thing. It's like, unless I have every I dotted and every T crossed, I'm not running it kind of thing. And then of course, COVID took over the world and like, okay, I can't run a retreat now kind of thing. And so the first kind of concept was back in 2018. I only say that is because I was fully invested in the no breakfast guy type thing. And I thought, okay, what it's going to be about is they're going to come to the retreat. We're going to fast. My original concept for the retreat was a 5-day retreat and you were going to fast the entire retreat. And there was a reason behind that. It had nothing to do with weight loss. And I mean, I'm very open now. Is it my thought process around weight loss, I've got zero time for it in my own mind. Like I don't even want to help people with fat loss anymore, kind of to the point is that I think so many people are so geared and there's so much content being crammed down their throat. It's like the most effective way to lose fat loss, the best exercise for fat loss, the diet for fat loss, this for fat loss, calories count, da, da, da. And I'm tired of it. And I can only imagine how the consumer who only just wants to feel, and I'll parry this on the point that you said, and I know we are constantly going off on different tangents. The point that you said before is that, what do I actually want out of owning a home? Okay, I want to have my own dogs. I want to have... So it's not actually about the home. It's about my ability to have dogs, have security, whatever it might be. And when you drill people down and ask them, what do you actually want to get out of making this change in your life at the moment? Be that changing their diet, changing their exercise regime, whatever it might be. I can almost say categorically, apart from a very small percentage of people, weight loss is never the top three things that people actually talk about. It's normally, I just want to feel healthier again. I want to feel like I'm doing, you know, putting the focus on me again because I've lost myself as a single parent or what, you know. It's all these other things that have nothing to do with calorie counting and losing weight and things like that. It's usually about feeling fitter, feeling more balanced. And I'll go back to the branding around balance again. But, and so the kind of concept around that original retreat of fasting for 5 days is that I think food for so many of us is a distractionary process in that I'm bored, I go and grab something to eat. And whether it's the phone that is the other distractionary process or whether there's all these things that we go, I don't want to deal with that at the moment. So I'm going to do something else that takes me away from having to deal with that thought or that moment in my mind that's kind of popped up. And so I thought, if I get people to fast for 5 days, at around about day three, shit's going to start coming to the surface that they're pushed down and fed, pardon the pun, fed with food or fed with a phone to distract them from, again, cliche things of that trauma that they had growing up or that sexual assault that happened or this or that or whatever it might be. But then I got scared because a client who is a psychologist came to me and she goes, Adam, if you do this, you are ill-equipped to actually deal with what's going to come to the surface. Like if all of a sudden Susie starts talking about the time that Uncle Bob molested her, God forbid if that kind of was the thing, what are you going to say? Like, you're not equipped. I'm like, oh shit. Yeah, I can't deal with that kind of thing. You're going to have people, and if you have a group of people, they're all going to start breaking down at this one point and tears, aggression, frustration, all these things are going to come up. And what, you're going to do that on your own with no...
Yeah, you would need a full team of allied health professionals to handle that. That would be...
Absolutely. And so that kind of scared me off this whole fast for 5 days kind of thing. But the idea of fasting then kind of evolved in, I wanted people to fast from their life in that your usual routine has you do this in the morning, then this at lunch, and you go to work, and then you got these kids and da da da. So I'm going to help you fast from that life. And by removing you from your typical kind of regimen and daily routine, I can then hopefully insert some things because you've got that time, that energy, that mental shift, and that ability for us to actually kind of dive into the psychology and the physiology and whatnot of living a more balanced lifestyle. That's kind of what it kind of evolved into. And so I now kind of coin it as the balance and lifestyle retreat kind of thing. And so my thought process is still around that fasting kind of idea, is that not only will I fast you from your lifestyle so we can involve, you know, different things and whatnot, but then to kind of use people like yourself that I think, and this is a kudos to you, is that you have an incredible way of talking to humans in a way that doesn't make them internalize their thoughts. Like I feel like, again, I've never met you and yet we've had a couple of conversations over a podcast and I feel like, and I think I have shared some pretty deep and meaningful things with you that probably I haven't shared with some humans that are kind of much more involved in my life, but I have that sense that I don't want to internalize it with you. I want to give it to you because I feel if I say that, maybe there's something that you'll say in return that is a nugget or a way that you say it or how you do it that makes me think in a way that I never thought about it like that. And so that's the skill set I want to use you for. And again, we'll workshop this now or off air or whatever it might be, in that whether you do a talk each afternoon or whether each person gets half an hour of alone time with Sam and you go for a walk in the hillsides that's around us and you can do what you please in that half an hour with Sam or whatever it kind of might be. I want to utilize what I think is your superpower and I think your great skill set in that you just allow people to kind of open up and then you say things in a way that can kind of make them reimagine that or redirect that thought in a positive way. And so that's where I see your input, at least in this retreat coming up.
Well, let me just start by saying I appreciate, you know, that feedback and those kind words. And I truly feel the same way about my conversations with you, which I swear I'm not just saying because this conversation is being recorded. I actually mean that. And what I'm about to say, I cannot stress enough, is not me patting myself on the back by any means. It's simply offering a little bit of context for some of the things you just outlined. When I first got into the fitness industry a little over 10 years ago now, a recurring theme that I saw over and over and over with clients was that there is just a tremendous amount of shame and guilt and self-deprecation surrounding all of this health, fitness, lifestyle stuff that prevents people from not only making changes, but even having conversations about it. Picture how many, say, coaching applications you've seen over the years where people are legitimately embarrassed to talk about not only the things that they're struggling with, but what their goals are. People will get on the phone with me and say, oh, I know it's kind of vain, but you know, I just want to have a flatter stomach. And I'm sitting here, why is that so bad? It's okay. You know, ideally we want to build out some other goals as well. But my point being, again, very early on, I saw how much shame and guilt and, you know, self-deprecation, et cetera, was wrapped up in health and fitness. So it became, calling it my mission sounds so corny and cliche, but for lack of a bit, bear with me here. It became kind of my mission. It's like, all right, this is the thing that I want, is to make people feel as comfortable as possible. This isn't to say letting people off the hook, you know, with complacency, not owning their shit and, you know, making a legitimate effort, making sacrifice, depending on what the goal is, et cetera. But making people feel comfortable, at least getting everything on the table, because it's not, at least I don't feel it's helpful for somebody to outline what they're struggling with and me to meet that with, well, that's an excuse. It's not about time. It's priorities. Like, okay, cool, trainer in a box. That does nothing for me. I've heard that a million times. So yeah, I say this not to pat myself on the back, but to just offer a little bit of context in terms of why I coach the way I coach and, you know, the way I operate. And it's just, I don't feel as though most fitness cliches, or even opening it up from that, just coaching in general, is overly helpful when it's, you know, putting labels on things, putting people in boxes, making people feel bad. Maybe that moves the needle in the very, very short term, but not when it comes to sustainable change. So yeah, I mean, when it comes to the retreat itself, I am very much at everybody's disposal. Whether that would be most helpful in the form of kind of a bigger talk in front of everybody, great, I love that stuff very much. Or whether it's more the one-on-one, like, hey, I didn't want to say this in front of the group, but here's this thing that I'm struggling with. And I'll stay within my scope of practice, of course. As we just mentioned, we're not psychiatrists, psychologists, etc. But often just to be a listening ear, help somebody organize their own thoughts, and because obviously that helps people with implementation, is if they come to their own conclusions. Again, I'm not sitting here claiming to be a psychiatrist, psychologist, anything of the sort, but I have seen that as well, when people can kind of come to their own conclusions, asking questions that prompt them to send them in that direction a little bit, tends to yield a much better result.
I think to kind of use your own thought process is, I say, fuck that. Pat yourself on the back. Like, yeah, you've just told people it's coming to you. It's like, oh, I just want a flatter tummy and I feel bad saying it. It's like, oh, own it. You want a flatter tummy? Let's, to I your point, that. It's like, you know, pat yourself on the back, because I think, you know, you've put in that work and effort to get to a place where you have that ability to. So now I say pat yourself on the back as much as you need to, because you've earned it. So that is a first point.
I appreciate that.
But yeah, to that last point that you made, I think I always use a kind of analogy with the movie, what was it called? Leonardo DiCaprio, not Deception.
Inception? No.
Inception. Yeah. Inception.
Oh, Inception. It was an Inception. Yeah.
Yeah. The one where he's got the spinning thing in his mind.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So that one where he goes, you know, we need to maybe be able to convince that brain that it was them that came up with the idea, or else there's always that sense, you told me to do this. Like, there's not a complete ownership of it kind of thing. And that's something that I've been struggling with of late as a coach with clients, in that I feel like I'm always recommending, suggesting, steering their conversation in a way that I feel that while I still have their best interest at heart, it's coming from a place where I am the professional, you are the client, therefore I know best, so listen to what I'm saying. And then the client goes, yes, sir. No, sir. They don't use sir, but like, you know, kind of, yeah, no yeah. worries. You know, this subservient type client that just like, whatever Adam says, I'll go and do kind of thing. But it, again, to kind of parry on the entire theme of this podcast today, is that there's those two kind of points in my mind, in that if I go to a dentist, I'm going to the dentist because they're the, I'm not going to sit there and second guess what the dentist is kind of saying. And so I sit there and go, no, I am the professional here. I do need to take some ownership of this situation. This person is coming to me for a service, so let me deliver that service. But then again, the other side of my brain then goes, but I think, and I've seen it time again, and I'm sure you have as well, is that the people who get the best results are the ones who, yes, listen to the advice, but they come to a realization, they come to a pivot point, they come to a decision that has fundamentally come from themselves, and it's a want to actually make that change or make that choice. And it's just, I think Jordan Seidt said at the age he didn't originally come, but I originally heard it from him, is that a good coach helps you, a client, is it, tells them where to look, but doesn't tell them what to see. I think it's something like that.
I get the gist.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I want to steer you in a direction to kind of like, these are some just suggestions, how you're going to navigate it. But that's what I've been finding most difficult as a coach of late, because again, I just don't want to talk about fat loss anymore. And yet everyone, but again, the flip side of it is, if you sell a program as the balance and lifestyle program, people go, eh, whatever. Like, they don't kind of look at it. Whereas if I go, lose 6 kilos in 6 weeks, even though the program has nothing to do with losing weight, it sells up front. And then on the back end, I can do this balance and lifestyle kind of idea kind of thing. And so again, I'm stuck in this two decisions where I was like, you know, what do I do? Like, this client genuinely does want to lose some weight and they would probably benefit by losing some weight. But I then see just how traumatized they are by the conversation and how frustrated they are with the process. And I've calorie counted, Adam. I've done this. And every time I step on the scale, I'm disenchanted, you know, franchised by it. You know, I'm like, I don't know. Da, da, da. So I'm just like, I get it. Like, I understand what you mean, but you know, what do you want from me? How can I help you in this process? Because I can sit here and tell you what to do, but you've done it before. So what are we doing here kind of thing? And so that's been my kind of big want, to just steer completely away from those conversations. And I'm living proof of that at the moment. I've never been heavier at a sustained kind of heaviness kind of thing. And I could care less. Like, I don't care to jump on the scales anymore. I enjoy the food. Like, all my goals now are around, can I keep up with my kids? Can I throw them around? Can we still have the wrestles that we like doing? Can I still go to the gym? Can I go to the surf and do those things? Tick, tick, tick. Like we're saying, with regards to what do I actually want from a household kind of thing, what I want from life, these are the ticks. Nothing of them has me, a six pack has me fitting into those pair of jeans I used to when I was 25 years of age. And again, to parry on this, and I'm sorry to jump into conversation again, is that I have all of these clothes sitting in my cupboard now that don't fit. And I, in my head, and I know so many people can probably relate this as well, I want to get into that pair of jeans I used to get. I want to get into the, but I was a 25-year-old fitness dude who had no girlfriend, no kids, no life, except for endless hours to train and endless hours to build a business. That human being there was all geared around getting in the best shape I possibly could to sell myself on the gym floor to, he looks fit, he could help me get fit kind of thing. Whereas now, I don't care to impress anyone with a six pack, or I don't need to kind of build clients to get, because the kind of clientele that's coming to me aren't young, healthy individuals trying to get fit for a wedding or a thing. They're all middle-aged people. And I hate to say I'm a middle-aged person, but like middle-aged people like myself who have a couple of kids who all they really want is just to feel healthy and fit around their kids and be able to enjoy the foods of a nighttime without thinking, shit, I got to step on that bloody scale tomorrow. I'm going to see a number that's not what I like. So I say all of that is, it go buy bigger clothes. Like, I know that. And that was the biggest mind fuck that I had for my own self. And I've shared that now with a couple of clients who have always struggled to get back into those jeans. It's like, cool, you always wear a size 8 pair of jeans or whatever it might be. For me, it's a 32 in men's kind of thing. I don't fit into a 32. I'm never going to fit into a 32 because I just don't want to sacrifice to get down into those again. So I'll go buy a size 34 jeans and they feel comfy and they look exactly the same, except the little number on the back says 34 instead of 32. I don't care. And it was the biggest revelation to me. Again, that's tangent from here to here. We're on a retreat.
I was going to say, per usual, Adam, I have 9 things now that I'm chomping at the bit. Ooh, he said that. And I definitely have something I want to add. So I'll do my best to organize my own thoughts and make this coherent. But when it comes to buying clothes that actually fit you, I think, again, maybe this is a diet culture thing, that we've all been conditioned to feel like that's the worst possible thing that you could ever do. We'd rather sit with a closet that is 75% composed of things that do not actually fit our current body than just buy things that do fit our current body. And an example I think of here in terms of why it's likely this way, among many other factors, is the conversation, and bear with me, this will sound random, but I promise I'll tie it in. the conversation surrounding women bulking up. Because historically, if a woman came to me, especially when I was still doing personal training, and said, oh, I want to strength train, but I'm afraid I'm going to put on a bunch of muscle, my immediate reaction, thanks to the conditioning that I had received at that point, was, oh, no, 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 don't worry. Like, you won't put on muscle. Like, you won't be bulky. As if that was the worst thing in a world that a woman could possibly put on muscle. Like, God forbid that you develop any muscle. I'd go through all the science and the mechanisms and the X's and O's of, like, don't worry, you'll never develop muscle, as if that's horrific, and here's why. And I think inadvertently, a lot of us coaches and trainers do the same thing with anything surrounding weight gain. And this is not to say that a lot of people will not benefit from a health perspective from losing weight, because it's absolutely the case, and I will not shy away from saying that. But when it comes to the weight specific stuff and what feeds into that emotion or that mental hurdle of people being unwilling to buy bigger clothes because they feel like it's failure in some way, what do we all do when a client steps on a scale after the weekend? And this is something that I've been challenging myself as a coach with more and more. They step on the scale after the weekend. It's up a pound and a half or 2 pounds or something. So that'd be half a kilo to a kilo. And it's almost certainly water weight, unless they were in a ridiculous surplus, but almost certainly just a little bit of water weight. And what's the first thing that we all do? Ooh, don't worry. This is not real weight. Like, don't worry. This is not real weight. It's water weight. And here's why. Indirectly insinuating that anything that even resembles weight gain is the worst thing that could possibly happen to you as a human being. And again, here we are just waffling on our own thoughts left and right. This is not to say that a lot of people will not benefit from a health perspective from losing weight. And again, I'm not going to shy away from saying that. But when it comes to more marginal amounts of weight gain, you know, perhaps that's not the thing that is, it's not as horrific as maybe you're making it out to be in your head, especially when considering the trade-offs and the sacrifices required to get back to your quote-unquote 25-year-old body. When you kind of list what's required versus what you'd actually be giving up. And I say this not to dissuade anybody from losing weight. If you think that's something that makes sense for you, great, so be it. But just to at least question it, which, again, we're laughing here, making fun of ourselves, Adam, of how much we are questioning our own thoughts. And, you know, we're going back and forth, but it's similar to you questioning that house. Okay, I feel like I shouldn't be stretching myself this thin, but wait a minute, let me at least have the conversation. I do think the same thing should be said of weight gain specifically, because all of diet culture, either directly or indirectly, insinuates that even gaining 2 to 4 pounds or 5 pounds at the tail end of a diet, God forbid that happens, that would be the worst thing in the world. Like, you'd be an absolute failure as a human being. So that's my initial thought on that. But I do want to backtrack. Of course, I'm blanking on the other 9 things I had in my head. But one thing, this is bringing it back maybe 15 minutes now, 20 minutes. You had talked about the idea, and this is coming out of left field because we've talked about 9 things since, but talked about the idea of fasting from life and how that gives you, whether you like it or not, the opportunity to really dive into your own emotions and without these kind of numbing creams that are food, drinks, electronics, etc. And that's something I've been thinking about more and more with the content that I put out, because I don't think it's exactly groundbreaking at this point when talking, say, weekend nutrition specifically, the thing that gives everybody trouble. It's not exactly groundbreaking for me to say, oh, well, if you know where you're eating in advance, plug in an estimate of how many calories that might be, try to build your meal around a protein, this, that, the other. If you ask me my advice on fat loss / eating out, I actually think that was the first time, or the first podcast we ever did on your show when you invited me on, was about eating out and fat loss. I probably gave the same advice that I'm giving right now in terms of, you know, plan it in advance, try to build your meals around a protein, et cetera. So then we ask, well, why aren't people following through with that? And although that's a complex answer, I do think a lot of that goes back to, if I were to strip away meals out, alcohol, and let's say Netflix and social media, how would you cope with your emotions? What would you do for entertainment? What would you do to unwind? What would you do for relief? And I think 99% of people who struggle with weight loss would have a very hard time answering that question. And I actually put out a tweet post a couple of months ago now where I did challenge people with that. Quick, you can't drink, you can't eat out for the next, I don't know, month or so. What are you doing to unwind at the end of a long week? and crickets. Nobody really has any idea. So it makes sense that even though we technically have the tools from a fat loss perspective, calorie counting, food scale, planning ahead, et cetera, we're not actually following through with them. And again, none of this is to step outside of my scope as a coach and try to play psychiatrist or anything like that. This is just food for thought. If we do eliminate those things, what are you replacing them with? And if you don't have good answers to that question, oh, well, I would journal, I'd read, I'd connect with friends, you know, more often, I would, you know, pursue more exercise specific goals, et cetera. It's no wonder that you're struggling with the diet side of things so much, because you're using that as your only coping mechanism. And again, this, I have 30,000 things in my head right now, so I'll wrap that up here, but no, some initial thoughts.
That's a really valid point you bring up there. And I'll say before I go into what I was going to say is that I pre-wrote the title and, do you call it a blurb or content section of what this podcast was going to be about? You know, it was episode 235. I'm bringing Sam Forget to my retreat in Australia, or it's Sam takes a big trip to Australia here. Like, it was something about that. I now know I'm going to change the title. Is Sam and I have no idea what we're talking about.
Literally no clue. If you've gathered nothing else from the last hour and a half, it's that we're indecisive and question everything in our head.
Yep. So it's interesting that, kind of, as I said, we'll come full circle, because I know it's getting really late for you, and I appreciate you kind of staying up, and I'm actually recording a podcast in about 45 minutes as well. So I'll need to just have a drinks break and a debrief break before I then get on to the next. And again, this is going to parry again. The next guest I've got coming on is a very long time client and mentor I've had for years. And he is someone who I think he's made me cry twice on a podcast. And every time we have conversations in depth and whatnot, he makes me think about life, kind of thing. And so I feel like I've had this kind of moment with you, and he's going to make me go, ugh, kind of thing again. So I really need to just step away and kind of have a moment, just kind of collect my thoughts, wonder what it's going to, yeah, kind of thing. But like, it's a really interesting point you bring up, as you said. And I've been asking the question of clients of late, of post weekend kind of in quote blues of like, I did this all weekend, I jumped on the scales, and this is what it's saying, instead of going, don't worry, it's only water weight, kind of thing. I've just been asking the questions like, did you enjoy your time? Like, what you did, be that a social gathering with work colleagues, or it was a best friend's birthday, a wedding of a girlfriend you've known since you were five, like whatever it was that you did you enjoy your time? And more often than not, the answer is yes, because it was some sort of gathering. But if it's not, and it was I felt shitty about myself because of a thing that's happened in life, and I sat in front of Netflix and ate an entire liter of ice cream, and now I felt shitty for doing it, I'm like, okay, cool. And comes right back to that thing that you literally just said. If you didn't have food, electronics, and social gatherings to kind of distract you from the shit that's going on at the moment, what would you do to unwind or kind of deal with those moments? That's a really good question, because I've never posed it in that way, that I can normally very easily answer the response when people say, I had the best time. It was my best friend's wedding. And so you can kind of then steer the conversation and like, enjoy it. How many times does your best friend get married? How many times? Like, so you can kind of, it's an easier conversation to have when someone's enjoyed it. But when it has been that miserable moment that someone's having for whatever reason that might be, I love that thought process. Like, well, what would you do if you didn't have a tub of ice cream to bury into, or you didn't have Netflix to kind of like, I don't think I've ever asked that question. I don't think many people ask that questions of themselves. And even as you were asking, I'm like, shit, what would I do if I didn't have, yeah, you know,
it's tough.
It's a tough one. And for me, again, it's time with my girls, or it's time in the water. Like, I cannot, again, I don't want to say it too flippantly, but I think finding the surf on a regular basis has saved my life. Again, that's far too flippant of a thing to say. It saved my life. I was never in a place where I needed saving of my life, but I, you know, coming over here, it was very isolating. It was, you know, very, it's a difficult thing just to pick up your entire life that, you know, knowing it's a move. Like when we did France, we very quickly realized that, okay, this is going to be a year off, but it's not forever. We'll be going home soon, kind of thing. And so that's an easier conversation to have in your mind, that this is only for 6 months or a year, and then I'll be back in the circle. But coming to WA, this was permanent. Like, yes, we could go back to Melbourne tomorrow if we really wanted to, but at the end of the day, this is a permanent move, and this is what we're doing. And so finding the surf, and in particular body surfing, which has been something that I've found new in my life, has been a godsend for me. And the only downside to that is there's not always surf. You have to wait for the right swell or the right wind conditions. And this is all things I've now learned now diving into that world. You can even have the best swell that's coming through and the right wind directions, but if there isn't a sandbank for that swell to hit, then it's not going to peel up correctly. And so I can read charts better. And I'm like, this is going to be a good day. I go down there, it's flat as a lake. I'm like, the fuck? Like, it said that. And I then get annoyed. I'm like, God damn it. Another day. I'm not certain, you know, kind of thing. I'm now having to deal with those emotions because it's something that I can go to the gym and that's my sanctuary. The gym's always there. The surf is not always there. And so that's why I'm having to kind of deal with that. But I think that's a really good question that you pose, and people can sit there and try and answer that for themselves. Like, if you didn't have those typical crutches that we all have, what would you do? I think that's a really valuable question to ask yourself.
And you can actually ask I think Mondays, to be honest, is the best time to do it, because typically most things go awry for most people from Friday night to Sunday night. But the questions that you can ask retroactively are, what was I feeling in the moment where I made that decision that perhaps Monday me is not very happy about, and get as specific as possible. I was feeling, you know, just kind of down. No. It's like the classic ask why 5 times. I'm not saying you actually have to hammer yourself with questions, but I was feeling, you know, whether it's overwhelmed, I was feeling frustrated with this, I was feeling, you know, burnt out with that, whatever it is, just get hyper, hyper specific with what the actual emotion is that you're feeling and why. And the reason I say that is that allows us to get hyper specific with the potential solution. So, okay, I was feeling extremely fried at the end of a long work day, and that's likely what contributed to me making the decision I did. Okay, great. Now that we got that specific, the question to ask is, how else might we meet that need without insert vice here? You know, whether it was alcohol or whether it was, you know, and this isn't to say that alcohol, meals out, you know, Netflix, these things we're talking about are inherently bad, but for most people, they're just not very thoughtful. It's just, it's a steady rotation of I'm coping with this. I say coping loosely. We're using them as a coping mechanism, but we're not actually coping with anything. It's more of that numbing thing. It's more of just getting us through to the next day, which is why, to bring it back to the retreat, I love the idea of kind of fasting from life. Not maybe we're not doing a 5-day fast, but fasting from life for a couple of days, because it forces us to at least ask those questions. Now, is it likely that with this one simple hack from Sam and Adam that you're going to radically change your life and say, oh, okay, I really like drawing, and now I'm never going to struggle with my weight again? I'm not saying it's that cut and dry, but at least moving you in the direction of asking that question and starting to build out that toolbox a little bit. And this is where I really do like pen and paper, sitting down, gasp, without your phone, without any other distractions nearby. You know, if you want to actually write the question on the top of the paper, so be it. What would I do to unwind? What would I do to get some relief, some emotional, like a lift at the end of a long day or long week without, and again, we're saying food, alcohol, TV, electronics, whatever those things are that you turn to. And if you sit there and there's a blank piece of paper, that's okay. Do not quit on that right away. Maybe even set a timer for 10, 15 minutes. Write as many things down as you can, even if 80% of these are shit and you know you're never going to do them. Like, don't have the bar be so high that you only want to write down the most perfect plan for unwinding. Write down anything that could theoretically be good, and then you can start to experiment with those things. And then when you're getting those emotional needs met through healthier coping mechanisms, like in your case, body surfing, just spending time maybe unplugged with friends and family members, it's very likely that you find yourself needing to turn to food, drink, et cetera, significantly less. So all this wasn't intended to be a weight loss specific conversation. It is something that definitely helps with that, and overall health as well, because although there's a time and place for these things, it's very unlikely that most Mondays, barring a special occasion, you look back on Friday through Sunday and say, yeah, I am so glad that I drank 2 out of those 3 days or all 3 days and went to bed late every single night. And I started my week feeling like utter shit again. That was worth it. Of course it's not. So start challenging the things that are prompting you to do that in the first place.
It's one final thought I'll do before I let you go, but it's interesting. We kind of say, I guess, like unplug, and you know what? It just brings me right back to the first retreat I had, because my whole idea was around unplugging from life and kind of what, And I said to everyone at the start of the retreat, and it was well known before coming, this is going to be part of it. You have to give up your phone before entering the retreat. I'm going to put them in a zipped bag. All phones go inside there. You can't have your phones. The things that came back from that, though, and the shit hit the fan with things that I couldn't deal with. It wasn't like but I can't post to Instagram. Like simple things like that, get over it. You're going to be fine without Instagram for a weekend. But I had one of the girls that was there. She was a single girl. She had had a home invasion 7 years prior, and it was only because she had her phone on her bedside table she could call the police. And she now cannot go to sleep without a phone next to her because she's still fearful of a home invasion. Even though we're in a safe environment, there's 10 other people in there. There's two guys, obviously Tom and I were the two guys. There's two guys that are there that, not saying I can protect you, but like, it's like you're in a safe environment. You're not a single girl in your own home on your own kind of thing. The idea of giving up her phone and not having that at the ready, I'm like, I can't just sit here and say to her, no, you need to give me your phone, get over you kind of this thing that you had. And then another person, there was a single mother there. This was the first time that she'd ever been away from her kids. She wanted to be able to talk to her child who's probably not going to sleep too well tonight. It's probably going to cry themselves asleep because mummy's not there for the very first time in their life. She's saying to me, Adam, I need to call my kids each night. I'm going to go, no, you don't get to call your kids. Like if someone tries to tell me you don't get to, like, fuck off, I'm going to call my girl. And so I'm going to ask you before I let you go. I still want to have something of that kind of sense, is like you disconnect from the outside world, because if you've got it sitting there with you, I understand the reasons why you want to hold on to it, have nothing to do with Instagram and disconnecting and unplugging from the matrix and, you know, all those kind of things. They're genuine things that kind of mean something in your life, but then it's always sitting there. Like, I've got this phone because if little Johnny needs to call me, I can be there for him. I think that takes away from you fully involving yourself in this experience that we're trying to have here. Have you got 2 cents for me that we can then implement to make that? Are there rules that we can have around it that still allow phones, but still allows them to disconnect properly? Like, what would your suggestions be for us going into that retreat?
I have so many thoughts in this. I'll do my best to keep it brief. My initial ones being having a designated time per day, because understandably, a lot of people in the room are going to want to be in touch with their partners, their families, et cetera. And having a debt, whether it's, you know, you get 20 minutes of breakfast or 20 minutes at the end of the day, et cetera, where you have something to almost look forward to, digitally speaking, where you know, okay, it's all right that I'm off my phone all day and away from family, you know, partner, kids, et cetera, because I know and they know it allows them to plan at, say, 7 o'clock. I'm going to get to FaceTime them before they go to bed. So I think that's helpful, having a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel rather than being semi-ambiguous where it's like, just try to stay off your phone, but nobody really knows who's talking to who and when. And then a recommendation I always like, and I go back and forth with clients about this, where somebody says, oh, well, you know, I want to have my phone directly on my nightstand in case one of my kids who's off at college calls me and they need me. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to sit here again as the non-parent and be like, no, you need to never, like, okay, I'm not going to push back on that. But if you're telling me it's for this specific need, then you shouldn't have a problem signing out of all social media, for example, shutting off all notifications not related to contact with your child, or if you really don't feel like you can stop yourself from signing back in, you're just doing the quick checks, deleting the app for 72 hours. So I think, again, if there's a specific need, great. We'll set you up digitally to make sure that that need is met, whether it's having, you know, do not disturb on, but partner, kids, they're an emergency contact. They can get through any time. But if we're saying, oh, it's for this specific thing, I want to be able to get in touch with so-and-so, great, we'll support that. But then our recommendation, we're not going to be phone Nazis, of course, and, you know, mandate that everybody deletes Instagram, for example. But the recommendation would be to put yourself in a position, almost like food, right? We talk about our physical environments. And if I were to open your cupboards and look at your fridge, do they lend themselves to a successful week of eating? Does it make it as low friction as possible for you to follow through with the thing? I think people can do the same thing digitally, where, okay, if the objective is to minimize phone use, but still be in touch with the people that matter most, there are some little things that we can do that typically starts with notifications, logouts, and deleting apps that make a gigantic difference. That way, when you do check your phone, say it's that one designated block per day, the perceived hassle of re-downloading Instagram, trying to remember whatever your password is, signing in, maybe two-factor, you know, authentication to sign it, I'm just not going to do that. So then you don't bother at all. Those would be some initial thoughts.
All right. So we can maybe still make it work. We'll see how we go. So it sounds good. Well, always have to finish off a podcast with my random question from the guest the week before. So let's just belt through that. And again, I'll let you go, man. I know it's late and I appreciate your time. So last week's question, as far as, again, this question was asked to me so long ago. I had to go through my phones like, where's that question I need kind of thing. But the question that was asked is, what's your superpower? And it's interesting. We kind of talked a bit. I gave you a compliment on what I thought it was. But yeah, what if someone asks you, what's your superpower? What is it?
Since you gave me permission to toot my own horn a bit, the thing that I do feel most confident about is making people feel extremely comfortable and at ease and like they can be themselves, which is something I really value. Because if you ask me right now to list the people most important in my life, the people that I look up to, the people that I admire, the people that I want to be around, they do the same thing for me, yourself included, Adam. I can't imagine there's something I could ever share with you or tell you that you would be remotely fazed by or not supportive of. And so that's the same thing that I want to give to other people. That's something that I've always tried to cultivate. And I've a kind of a funny side story here. The amount of times I've been in like a random interaction in a grocery store, convenience store, and all of a sudden somebody is telling me like their marital problems or something going on with their kid. And I'm not saying I'm the guy to help you troubleshoot that, but I'd like to think is a testament to how comfortable I can make people feel, again, just being themselves, sharing things with me. So I don't know what you'd actually call that for a superpower, but that's something that's very important to me.
Beautifully answered. And before I kind of just then parry onto that, it's like, I just need to get off you. What's your next question, or what's your question for next week's guest?
Oh, this is tough.
I'll put you on the spot.
I want this to be a good one. I'm trying to think of a question that I've been asked recently that was, you said you had one more like thought or question to share. Maybe you can buy me a little bit of time.
I was basically going to wrap it up and say, and I'm happy to kind of do that while you're thinking. But I know we put it out into the ether and into the world years ago at just a passing thought. And it's interesting, even as we've been chatting today, as we've been going through the different things and ups and downs, and you know, you're not completely locked into life of where you are. I reckon I'm going to keep pushing you to try and come and move to Australia, because I reckon we could do some damage together and we could do some proper work and start a proper business together. But whether I can ever convince you of doing that or not, I appreciate your time and I appreciate what you bring to the world. And I think what you said is regarding your superpower. Like I feel so blessed that you have the clients that you have in your life and the touch that you have on them, because I know how valuable you make me feel, if that makes sense. That's not what I'm trying to get across. But what I'm trying to say is that, you know, what you do kind of just in our conversations, I only know that you must do exponentially even more so for the clients that are in your life and the people in your life. And so they're very lucky to have you. I'm lucky to have you. And the 9 guests we're going to have at this retreat are going to be super happy to have 4 days with you in that capacity. So I'm really excited by, one, I said meeting you, but for 2, actually working with you on that sense. And if I could show you just how beautiful Australia is in those 4 days, I'm going to get you, you and Vanessa are going to get back on a plane and I'll get you living here before too long. And I'll happily put the sponsorship up so we can get you permanent residency and we'll do a permanent gig over here.
Adam, I got to say, that's probably the nicest outro that anybody's ever done for me. So thank you so much for that. And I will say, it is a very cliche American thing to do, to travel somewhere for the first time and instantly think, I could see myself living here. So I don't doubt that post September, I come back to the city, talk to Vanessa and say, hey, I don't know what you had in mind, but we're making a big change. So that could happen. And actually, I'm going to use this as my question for the next guest. And that is, if you had to move somewhere tomorrow, I want to add a little caveat or stipulation, because I don't want someone to move one town over and cheat the system. Yeah. So let me say, if you had to move out of the country tomorrow, and you had to stay there for an extended period of time, this is not a vacation, this is permanent residency somewhere else, where would you pick and why? Because I do think, without going on too much of another tangent, that what people come up with is almost like, you know, early in life, there are two ships you can theoretically get on. One of them is the, you know, maybe staying in your hometown. It's the traditional, it's the safe thing. And then there's the other ship that you never got on. And I think a lot of people's answer to this question would be that second ship, almost that city that got away, that card that I didn't turn, that's always been in the back of my mind. And I've always found when I talk to people about travel and moving, they light up. They think about, oh my God, I've always thought about, you know, moving here, or trying this, or even if it's just a fun make-believe, but maybe that'll be a nice question for the next person.
Sounds good. Yeah. I've got nothing but endless stories, and all of my stories usually revolve around trips I've been on and the shit I've gotten up to on those trips. And I still laugh about it. I still reminisce about it. And as I said, I just went back to Melbourne, and the two best mates in my world, you know, we're 30 years of friendship now together. The three of us always go back to the same conversations. Remember when, we laugh, we reminisce about those fun times. And yeah, it's usually revolving around some sort of travel, whether that was just to travel to a different state or travel to a different country. I think, yeah, you're right. Like, it's getting more and more difficult these days as we're all time crunched and travel's expensive and we've got other things going on. But yeah, I cannot recommend travel more. That, yes, it's an expense, but my God, what a return on investment that expense is in so many other ways than just, again, monetary value from what it is. So,
I mean, you beat me to the punch, and I swear I'm going to let both of us go in a second, Adam, but you had mentioned how travel is an investment. And I realize that people, you know, when they hear, oh, it's an investment in yourself, it's a thing that we say so often that people are like, I get it. But travel specifically, like right now, if I asked you to think about some of your favorite travel stories, I bet you would smile instantly. You'd feel like fundamentally your emotional state would change, and we'd probably get lost in conversation for the next 3 hours. And I think of the first time that I left the country, I went to the Amazon rainforest with my buddy Malik, and we fished for piranhas, and we saw anacondas, and we saw, like, I mean, just the list goes on. It was crazy. The amount of times I have talked about that sense, whether it's actually with Malik, whether it's on podcasts, I just told some of the stories from that trip in a public speaking class that I did. The ROI on that investment, it was maybe, I don't know, a $1,200 or $1,500 2-week trip or something, is so dramatic relative to the dollars spent, because the amount of joy that I can extract from those travel experiences, quite literally, it feels like at least once a month, if not more, I end up talking about that trip. It ends up becoming relevant. Is crazy. I'm never going to forget that. So, you know, God willing, I live till I'm 80, 90 years old. The amount of times I will have experienced retroactive joy from that travel investment over the course of a lifetime it's out of this world. So yeah, I understand, of course, there's a level of financial privilege and not everybody can travel very often, but even if it is one city over, one state over, with as many people as you possibly can, I think that is, you know, recurring theme here, other currencies besides cash, I think it's off the charts.
Well, I hope, just to, again, parry on that, and I will definitely sign out to, we've got the three mates of us, myself and these two other mates. Obviously, we just had our 40th birthdays in the last year, and we've made plans for the 50th. And if you can, as you said, the more people we can have on this, the better. I would love in 10 years' time for us still be chatting away, and then to you be part of one of those stories that we have, in that we're heading to Monaco. We're going to watch the Grand Prix on the back of a super yacht in 10 years time. And so if you can make yourself present, and you and Vanessa, because it's going to be us and the wives. And so you can absolutely bring Vanessa along. I think the more people we can have on that, one, it makes it cheaper, because it's really, The more
there's the real motive. There's the real motive.
We can share that cost. But for two, I think what you said, I'd much rather share that with 50 other people than kind of be there with three people and go, remember those? And everyone else sitting there go, oh, must be nice kind of thing. I'd much rather share that with 400 other people. So yeah, 10 years time, mate. Just have it in the back of your mind. Let's we'll meet up in Monaco. That.
I'll be 38. And what's funny about that, so I'll be 38, you'll be turning 50 then, is that our friendship at that point will have extended, you know, 15, 20 years, but more than likely 2 to 4 actual meetups in person over that 15 to 20 year period, which is crazy to think about. But I'm officially letting you go, because when we try to say goodbye, it's a no, you go scenario. So I'll call it here.
I appreciate it, dude. Well, I'll see you in, what is it? June, July, August. 3 months time or so. But I'm sure we'll talk before that, because we have to go over a few things. But again, mate, I appreciate the 2 hours that you've given over to us there, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Good on you, mate. Guys, Sam and I officially have no idea what we're talking about, and I appreciate you hanging about for 2 hours to hear our ramblings. If you are still with us, like, subscribe, do all those things you need to do. But I'll talk to you next week. I love you all. Bye.